Got it, got it. Okay, yeah. So we'll do the intro.
So let's do an intro, yeah.
All right, let us know when we can start introducing. I'm Katie Parla, a Rome-based food and beverage writer, culinary guide, cookbook author, and cookbook publisher.
And I'm Danielle Caligari, assistant professor of Italian at Dartmouth College and writer at large for Wine Enthusiasts covering Tuscany and the Italian South. And this is Gola.
Hey.
Hey.
What's up?
Well, Katie, I am having a fun day recording the podcast with you, and you and I have been talking about some gossips, as they say in Italian.
Pettegolezzo.
And I was talking with you about this in particular because you have been touring for Food of the Italian Islands, your amazing new cookbook, which also comes out, or is out, as part of a new publishing series that you have put together, an entire press that's all made in Italy.
That's correct. Parla Publishing, baby.
And because of that, you have been bouncing around to lots of Italian and American and Italian-American establishments to share that book. And I have been traveling both in Italy and in the U.S. over the summer. And we have seen all kinds of different establishments working on bringing Italian food to Italians, Italian food to Americans, and everything in between. And we had a series of thoughts because it's something that kind of folds into our world in a very specific way. We're translators of food and beverage, if we can put scare quotes around that, right?
See.
We're always trying to.
That means yes. Right.
Just quickly popping that into Google Translate. You and I are always trying to explain the things that we enjoy about Italian food and beverage in a kind of immediate way, just telling people what they are and why they're great and delicious, but also to give some meaning behind it, some context. And one of the things that we were thinking about just recently in particular was the way in which some establishments are doing that work or maybe not doing it and just trying to make a buck off of it. And we unsurprisingly had a few opinions.
It's true. And, you know, this is such a big category and we can, I think, kind of draw some general categories. One, and we're talking about a U.S.-based business structure at the moment, but Italian businesses that have opened in America. I'm thinking Bonci in Chicago, All'Antico Vinaio throughout New York, Roscioli also in New York. And these are places that have a long established, well respected brand in their hometowns. And translating them, transporting them carries with it some challenges. And so far, these businesses have been relatively successful, with the footnote that I believe Bonci USA has opened 6 total spaces and I believe 3 or 4 are currently still going.
Got it. Well, these are all great examples of, I think, very visible ones, but you and I have also seen some smaller brands try to plow their way into the American market, and it comes up with wine all the time for me, also for you, obviously, but for me, that's a little more present because I'm covering it in an official capacity, and it's prompted us to consider the things that work and don't work and the things that we like about the opportunity to experience Italian food and beverage in its not original context and the things that we're wondering if they'll ever happen or if they'll figure it out somehow along the way. A big part, as you're saying, is the immediate visibility. So the names you're talking about are ones that, if you visited Rome in particular, are going to be, I think, pretty available to people. And they're the kinds of places people want to visit. And I'll throw this out at the top, and we'll probably come back around to it a few times. They're also big question marks for us because one of the things that we've been acutely aware of in the last year or two in a post-pandemic atmosphere is what makes something worth traveling for. And food and beverage has been the kind of go-to example of a product that ostensibly can be translated in the literal sense of being brought across the ocean. But can the experience actually be recreated and what is gained and lost?
Yeah, I think about this a lot, particularly because since I've moved to Italy now 20 years ago, there's been a huge shift in the type of Italian or Italianish things available in the US and elsewhere, from the sort of Italian American or Italo Canadese approach, merging maybe elements of Italy with elements of North American cuisine, portion sizes, dining times, and needs. That's been joined now by, I don't know, do we want to like give it a category? Contemporary Italian, new Italian, Italian?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, all the things, I think you and I are certainly acutely aware of the difference between Italian and Italian American. Our generation, if we want to talk sort of micro generations, you and I are about the same age from almost the same background and the same level of education and interaction with Italy. So we're a good kind of like neutral starting point in that sense. We were brought into a space where we wanted to make people more aware of the distinctions between what's actually happening in Italy, what was happening in Italy, the history that led to that, and then the difference that occurred in Italian American cuisine that moved to a new space and then had a distinctly different history and growth from there as a result of being elsewhere in terms of raw ingredients and, as you said before, the rhythm of life in general.
Sure. And I think it's worth noting that in the turn of the 20th century, migration away from Italy to places in the Americas, a lot of the types of foods that might have been served by Italian origin restaurant owners were being served by people who had previously little to no experience dining out.
Right, absolutely. And probably a very limited or a very kind of peculiar relationship with Italy in a kind of broad sense. They might have had a close relationship with a very local, specific culture of where they grew up or where their families grew up, but sure, less of an understanding of what might be understood, what might be called pan-Italian. Now we're in a sort of new micro generation where, especially after 2008, but also again, so there's actually been probably two or three shifts economically that have pushed Italians to open up their lens in a kind of general sense to often move physically to new markets in order to find places where they can be economically successful and also where they can have that more dynamic opportunity to share food in a new culture, a new sure context. And so I think more people are aware of the difference between Italian and Italian American, but maybe less aware of what you're talking about between Italian and the last decade or so of significant changes that have occurred in the way Italians eat. And that's a thing that I think we've talked about a lot at the day-to-day individual level, but then at the public dining level, which is in itself its own context. So sure, if you're talking about moving a restaurant like Roscioli from Rome to New York, which is the first stop for us because it just opened and it had a lot of press around it, so it's a good example. We're talking about helping people to understand or not, again, you know, how, to what level of success, what people are eating in Rome right now that has become popular, that has a scene around it too, not just a something that's interesting if you care about food, but if you care about being part of the culture right now, and how it's possible to have that inserted into New York or, let's say, other major international city where people have all of these expectations, but maybe very little context for that.
Sure. And, you know, bringing up Rosciole or any of the places we named before, Bonci, Antico Vignaio, the list goes on. These are not Italian businesses transplanting themselves. These are Italian businesses with American partners who are assisting in the transition and translation. And also at times shifting price points. Like, you can definitely go to Rosciole in Rome and, you know, it's very physically challenging to get all the courses. But if you get a starter and a pasta or some cheese and cured meats and a pasta, you might pay 70 euros. But the New York experience routinely tops 100 without service and tax ahead. So already placing in a different series of consumer consumption patterns.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we can probably make a pretty good list of the big things that are going to be just immediately superficially different. One is price point. You just can't translate it. The overhead to operate a business in an American, really any American city, New York is astronomically higher, but most others are much higher than in Rome. Labor costs are much higher. Leases are much more expensive. Insuring a business like that is a totally different ballgame. And sourcing is, of course, in this case, immediately much more expensive because you're talking about moving ingredients that would be local in the original context to a purposely not local context.
Sure. Or replacing salumi and fresh cheeses with domestic production, which in my experience doesn't rival the higher quality available at a place called Rosciole or the freshness of mozzarella that you might encounter at Rosciole. But if any listeners know where you can get a tremendous quantity of exceptionally fresh and delicious domestic mozzarella, hit us up. We know Armini's making their stuff in Petaluma area out of buffalo milk. Jersey Girl Creamery in North Jersey's doing some good mozzarella, but we want more than two names.
Yeah. We'd love that. We would love that. And we love to support our local businesses here and there, everything local, wherever you are, whenever you can manage it. And Katie, you're giving some examples that I think are great in terms of their iterations within that space, but it's also kind of bringing us back to the fact that when you are looking for something that is representative of a space, right? This is what we're talking about all the time. Why is food? Why is what we eat and drink important? It's important because it reflects the space, the people, the long history, the culture that those products are emanating from, and if it's not from there anymore, is it that, right? So it's more of an existential question also at the same time. We know producers of all of the products that we talk about. Well, another new one this year is that there are a handful of domestic truffle producers in the U.S. who have garnered some attention. And I actually haven't tried any of them yet, so I'm not going to name anybody or have an opinion on it until I can have an informed one. But Is it a truffle if it's not from – is it an Italian truffle if it's not from truffle country? I don't know.
Truffles in Italy even from Italy?
Correct, right? So then you have then we have how many levels of difficulty, because even fresh mozzarella, we both know that in an ideal world, you would only have it in the morning in Paestum and then never again, right?
Not till the next morning.
Right, well, but that's ingredients. I think most people, that is an obvious one for us, no question. Price point, sure. What else is changing when you're moving an Italian dining experience to the U.S.? We both do a lot of back and forth, but I think you're probably really attuned because it's just your day-to-day is really just about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to cite the one of the businesses as an example, the All'Antico Vinaio, which I am not a customer of this place in Florence or Rome, but I've seen the size of the sandwiches.
Nor have I ever been,
and
for
so,
clarity. Yeah.
And so what's not changing is the size of the sandwich. It's equally gigantic, almost obscenely large compared to the other sandwich options in Florence, mm-hmm. and the U.S. other sandwich dimensions in Italy. I don't know where I'm talking about right now. What's this podcast about?
So the
sheer quantity that it was born with, the way that it is an anomaly in Florence in terms of the number of ingredients and the kind of presentation, that made it ripe for just like inserting into especially a northeastern city sandwich culture. And Bonci, on the other hand, I always found it so interesting that the format of pizza al taglio and the genre of pizza al taglio that Bonci does is pizza in teglia, sheet pan pizza, mm-hmm. cut to order from the sheet pan in the dimensions that you ask and then weighed with the corresponding price given to you after the fact. I was always surprised in my visits to Bonci in Chicago that they didn't change that format because it's so distinctly Roman. And so un-American, mm-hmm. but not in like a weird anti-patriotic sense. It's like Americans need to know, is that a $2 slice? What am I working with here?
Right. Well, I think this is a really important observation because the essence of that is there's a cultural difference underneath it all. And so one example is a sandwich shop that makes really big sandwiches. Not surprising to us, probably, that it was perceived as something that could move into an American context easily. Americans, for better or worse, are known for loving quantity, often at the expense of quality. And I would say, this is also anecdotal, I don't have evidence of it for sure, but in my passing by the outrageous line that is always in front of that shop when you're in Florence, it's almost entirely foreigners and mostly Americans. And so I don't think either one of us was shocked to learn that they thought that that would make a good experiment when it comes to making the leap across the ocean to the other, to a place where people might not otherwise have access to it.
Right. And when we say they, we mean the founder of Antico Vinaio in Italy and Joe Bastianich.
Right. So, sorry. Right. As you've pointed out, right, we always have a kind of partnership model here. And when you're talking instead about the Bonci example, I think we have a product that became, that was viewed as a possible, as a good possibility, a worthy subject to take a risk on, because pizza is so transversal, and pizza is something that has a lot of different iterations in the US and a lot of passion behind it, no matter how it appears. And so it felt like a safe bet in that sense. And so I think we can, when we're looking at these examples, what we're looking at is things that have, you know, if there are five qualities about them, two or three are already culturally fluid enough that you can anticipate an audience being excited enough to get past or to find enthusiasm for the parts that they're unfamiliar with.
Sure. And the very prosperous West Loop district of Chicago is a good place to put what by local standards would be considered a very expensive pizza by the slice shop.
Right. So speaking of a pizza by the slice shop, then we can also talk about atmosphere, which I think is something that you perceive when you're there. So everybody can have this experience, but you might not in the abstract think about it as such a critical element. And yet all of the places we've mentioned and then some would be the feeling that you have in the place is radically different. In an Italian restaurant, we know there are a few things. Some of them I don't like, and I'm sure I've voiced that here.
No bussers.
No, right. Nobody running and nobody clearing. Nobody willing to turn down the lights from the level of what I would consider to be a surgical theater. And a very high likelihood that everyone is close together, whatever the layout of the restaurant. Two tops that can be, that are a foot or two apart maybe, and that can be jammed together real fast to make as long a table as you need for whatever group comes in. A very flexible space and one that is going to feel crowded, hopefully intimate in a good way when it's done well, but sometimes maybe a little bit claustrophobic also.
Mm-hmm. Another dominant feature of Italian restaurant spaces is the carabinieri calendar.
I haven't thought of that in a long time.
They're everywhere. Yeah. That's the way, so that the carabinieri know you have paid your dues, basically.
Exactly.
You've supported the cause, so they should leave you alone.
That's really funny. It's true that any like little trattoria always has it hanging at the front by the casa.
Yeah, right next to Jesus.
Right. Well, it's best to have everybody in line.
That's right.
Well, speaking of authorities, the ability to run a restaurant in the US and the EU at the top levels and then more local from there is also very different. Anybody who's worked in service, or particularly if you've been in any kind of managerial position or ownership position, will know that not just opening a place, but running and maintaining a place in the US means constant interaction with health authorities, inspections of various kinds that are often surprise, a lot of questions of insurance and liability, a lot of questions about food safety that have to be addressed again regularly, a lot of issues when it comes to where food can be served or not, who can come in and out of a restaurant depending on what kind of service there's that is available, and all of that really a lot of times taking up even more time maybe than the actual business of making and serving the food. Not that this isn't the case in Italy,
Lots of laws, less enforcement.
Right. but the question of enforcement tends to be looser. And the things that people put emphasis on are different there. You know, I think speaking of insurance, like if you've ever had a restaurant in the United States, I'm sure that you've had a lot of headaches with liability, worrying about somebody hurting yourself on the premises, eating something that puts their health or their life in danger. Yeah.
Just the liquor license so many liability issues that are absent in an Italian context.
And that's exactly where I was getting. The question of alcohol service is a total nightmare in the US and an almost non-issue in Italy, to the extent that if you're serving hot food in a sit-down atmosphere, you're welcome to have whatever kind of beverage program you would like to pair that with. Whereas in the US, that's absolutely not the case. And then you can spin that out into the question of whether you're in, you know, what kind of commercial zoning you're in. Another thing that sort of exists in Italy, but not really, because there is not the hard, firm division between commercial and residential zoning in urban centers for sure. Elsewhere, maybe a little bit more. But once again, it's expected that you would have a place where you could go and eat and drink nearby your home, and no matter where you are in Italy. Whereas in lots of places in the US, it is actually very hard to open a place that serves a community within that community in a hyper-local sense, if we're thinking about like a kind of residential area of a city.
Absolutely. So when we're talking about these Italian dining customs and drinking customs, I think it's also important to note that in Italy, you don't get what you want just because you want it. Whereas it's a borderline necessity, unless you want someone to absolutely destroy you on Google or Yelp, to provide people with what they want in the order in which they ask for it, or the types of drinks that they want and the moment in which they want it. In Italy, simply, you may not have a cocktail in most places. There's no ice and there's no glassware.
Right.
There's no one with any mixology experience. And good luck getting a Manhattan almost anywhere except very specific places.
Except, right, a dedicated cocktail bar. And that's exactly what you're pointing out with kind of each of those elements. The idea is that a place is dedicated to a certain kind of food. Now, that might be in a hyper-specific sense of this is a pizzeria, so we have pizza, and there are a handful of other snacks before, and maybe some salads, and that's sort of
and beans.
Right? That's the beginning and end of it, and you can pair that with a beer. Maybe they have one beer on tap, and then they would have beer in bottle, and a handful of wine options. It is a place that you understand before entering, it doesn't matter which one it is or how it's developed, the context of that space is understood culturally. As you're saying, in the US, not only at the level of the full menu that we're talking about, but also at the more specific dish level, you have people who would be expecting to effect modifications on a dish or an item that would be very hard to even understand in Italy. You wouldn't order something and then change how it is. It's just not done. It's not a question of that they can or can't, or even if they're mad about it. Sometimes they will be, but yeah. sometimes they just don't understand because they say this is what it is. So if you don't want that, you don't get that.
Yep. Right. And generally speaking, some neo-trattoria, neo-bistro vibes excluded. When you go to a trattoria in Rome or Milan or an osteria in Bari or Napoli, they're serving the food of that place. Whereas in a U.S. or Canadian or other context, there's the borderline obligation to offer things outside of a regional identity. And there are very, very few places that I have encountered anywhere outside of Italy that have been able to serve exclusively Sicilian dishes executed in a traditional way without also having to have a few foreign things from other Italian regions or twisting things or combining things so that two regional traditions merge in a plate that would be unrecognizable in an Italian context.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so the Sicilian example is a really curious one because every region in Italy has its unique identity, of course. We've talked about this many times. And we were both just talking about the different ways that we've traveled and the places we appreciate and the reason why we're interested in certain restaurant chains or brands moving over to the U.S. is the idea that they have garnered an amount of kind of pan-Italian visibility that they're worth, that people feel that it's worth experimenting with them elsewhere. And yet there are some Italian cuisines that remain really obscured and just unavailable outside. And so they sort of put this whole counterpoint against everything we're talking about because somehow they stand out as a priori untranslatable, right? Even though it would seem, particularly for Sicilian cuisine, that there could be so much traction in where we grew up. There's plenty of Sicilians of origin, and there are plenty of Sicilians coming now because of the economic impetus that we were talking about and the fact that they have great hospitality and a lot of experience, often actually now increasingly in high-end establishments as well. And there's a feeling, and I wonder, you know, I'm sort of posing this as a question for myself also, if that untranslatability is a real hard fact or if that's also an investor-imposed sense of the ability, you know, like pizza will do, cheese and meat we can do, certain kinds of wacky pastas will work, but Sicily is a terra incognita that cannot be understood elsewhere.
I mean, I think it requires just a lot of curiosity and education. Curiosity on the part of restaurant owner or chef, and education of the client. Because although there have been great strides made in the understanding of Italian regional cuisines and the nuances and ingredients that reflect those, in the end, in a U.S. context, you are still serving a very large community with a wide range of expectations. And Neapolitan pizzerias in New York can be very, very rigid in what they're serving. But I haven't encountered other examples of this. Mm-hmm. What I encounter more and more frequently, and it's very exciting, is people who are taking the sort of spirit of Italian cooking, translating their experiences in Italy, and then translating and distilling it for their particular community. So I was just on book tour, and that brought me to a number of really freaking cool places where, in the case of Detroit, She-Wolf, shout out to the She-Wolf staff who was required to listen to this podcast as part of their education.
Literally the least you can do is tell them that we know that they're listening and we appreciate it and also are sorry for them.
Grazie. So in a place like She-Wolf in Detroit, it's, you know, a rather elegant restaurant. The chef, who is of Trapanese origins, certainly has the knowledge and know-how and the ability to educate each and every person that walks in there about Sicilian cuisine or fresh pasta from Emilia-Romagna. But in order to create a functioning business that staffs a lot of people and needs to take care of them day in and day out, doing something that is so, I think, sort of focused is really, really challenging.
Yeah.
Frasca, which is this spectacular bastion of Friulan culture in Boulder, Colorado, certainly veers away from the Friuli theme, absolutely veers from the Friuli theme. And Bobby Stuckey and the staff at Frasca are so trusted by their clients and so revered that they, if they did like a straight old school Friulan menu, I'm sure people would be on board. But to have a more dynamic kitchen, to have a more contemporary kitchen, there has to be a little bit of leeway going beyond the borders of Friuli for a little bit of inspo. Certainly the wine list reflects that as well.
Well, and I'm glad you pivoted to wine just there at the end, because that was exactly where I wanted to connect to what you were saying. The question of education is a critical one and a really hard one for people managing all the things we've talked about now to balance when they're at the same time starting from a kind of from scratch position. If you're going to try to promote an angle or that's probably an Italianism of Italian cuisine that is a little bit less familiar or wholly unfamiliar. You mentioned several businesses, and we are always finding more where the people are really putting the work in, and it's amazing at what happens as a result of that. But the other side of it is that it's an uphill battle, and I don't envy them for it at all, because if you want to put together a great Italian wine list, it's a lifetime pursuit, and it's exhausting. And
imagine if you have to do that in Pennsylvania.
Right. So when I'm in the U.S., I'm between New York and the Northeast in general. When I'm moving around, dining out, seeing people, it's a place where there's a strong relationship with Italian and Italian-American identity. There's a large market for wine in general and a lot of development of Italian wine culture in particular. And it's still a lot of work for a SOM and a beverage team, however they're put together, to learn about what's going on in Italian wine, and then to in turn, and this again brings us back to where we started, and to translate that to people who aren't familiar with it. You're not just telling people the name of something, you're trying to explain to people a culture. And that's sort of, I think, the foundation of what we're talking about here. And when it works, it's wildly exciting. It's really cool to see people getting emotional and passionate about their relationship with a new wine and their ability to dig into something that they weren't aware of before.
For sure.
And of course, to bring that together with food and hopefully use those products to do what they're meant to do, which is transport and allow you to travel when you can't actually physically travel to a place and feel closer to it. On the other hand, there are lots of places where they don't bother because it is all of that work. And so those are the times when you say, do get on a plane, actually.
Well, lest you think I was denigrating Pennsylvania, I was simply referencing the state liquor board that really limits easy access to interesting wine portfolios. Mm-hmm. So a special shout out to Food of the Italian Islands book tour hosts, Bar Marco and Luca Lancaster. Mm-hmm. Both of those wine programs work with, you know, not behind the liquor board, but in addition to the state liquor board and what is available in the state, are able to access various portfolios with a lot of legwork. It's really, really challenging to get cool wines to Western Pennsylvania when there aren't that many people creating a demand for it. So props to Bar Marco in Pittsburgh. And then over east, Luca's doing some cool stuff too. And they even have a whole wine wall of like, hey, this liquor board thing kind of sucks. Do you want to know some wines that we got that are not part of that system? And here you go.
It's a ton of work, and I give them a ton of credit for it. And I will say that it brings me to a kind of maybe conclusion point, although every time we say that we're like, that's probably,
done.
I know. No, I think in terms of considering what we are valuing here, if we're talking about the places that we think are successful and are worthwhile visits, if you're looking for an Italian food and beverage experience that mirrors or maybe is a literal outpost of that place, what you're still looking for at the end of the day is an individual commitment, right? People behind the thing. So what ends up happening to the places or at the places that we value and respect is they're not only doing the education, they're not only considering all the cultural differences and how to bridge the gap without erasing it and et cetera, but they're present. There's someone there. And I think that's the thing that you see in an Italian place that makes it a worthwhile visit while you're there on the ground as well. Is it somewhere where there's a personality, a character behind the place that connects all the things that we're talking about, not just good tasting thing in front of you, but a richer context that has some culture and some sociability behind it.
Yeah. And inevitably, all the people who fill that role are doing what I think is the most Italian thing possible in the kitchen. They're using domestic ingredients when they can and substituting with quality imported ingredients when it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
So I've had just such exciting and fun meals at places. And I think maybe just to like go back to one point earlier, maybe the only place that's like really hardcore Sicilian or at least close to hardcore Sicilian that's like really doing it is Zeppoli in Collingswood, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Joey Baldino, who's just like a absolutely brilliant and very humble person. But the places that I visit on my book tour, the places that you visit in your free time, I know there's a place that you want to share with the listeners. These are cool spots that are going to be there to answer your questions. They're going to want to talk to you about your travels. The chefs and people working in the kitchen and sometimes the floor staff have Italy trips as part of the education of the restaurant. And so that creates an even greater bond, one far greater than the Italian-American restaurant in my town ever had with Italy.
Right. Well, I think sensibility is what we're getting to. And there are lots of places that I can and should list. And one of the things that we hope everyone will follow us on social media and elsewhere, one of the reasons that we love to have our listeners follow us on social media and elsewhere is so that we can connect them with the people we think are doing these things, is because we have such a long list of them. It's not a sense of dearth, but actually of riches. So to be sure. But one that just came to mind while we were talking is Mermaid's Garden in Brooklyn, run by a wonderful woman, Bianca, and her partner, who are not doing anything specifically Italian, really, in the sense that it is simply a sustainable fish shop that considers seasonality when they're working with their purveyors. The non-Italianness of it is somehow even more Italian, I think, in this case. It's about being thoughtful, having good, fresh ingredients, doing the educational element by helping consumers to understand why there are certain things available and certain things not, why there are certain price points for certain items and others, I should say, that veer from what they might be used to seeing elsewhere, and a sense of hospitality even in a place that's not a sit-down service restaurant.
That's not Italian.
No, actually being mean is a very important part, making people feel like they're – well, you start mean and then you warm up. It's the inverse to the American experience. Yeah.
That's right, especially at the fish stall. You start mean, you try to give away rotten fish, and then when the customer says, hey, this is rotten fish, you're like – okay, we're friends.
Okay, now we can be friends. But, you know, I think we look for that in all of the places that we go to that are bringing, again, right, just bringing a sensibility. The things that we value in an Italian culinary context are these ideas more than specific items or ways of consuming.
Definitely. Go check those and other places out. Full disclosure. She-Wolf is a supporter of this pod. At least Anthony Lombardo, the chef, is a supporter of this pod.
Yeah, I don't think
this wasn't an ad.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's thrown around enough money to attract the attention of of the authorities just yet. But I look forward to the day when we have to have disclosures at the top.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you, Katie, you and I don't get to go out to eat together very often in the U.S. Well, a little bit in Italy and still less in the U.S., I would say. But when we do, we pick these places because, once again, not because of what we're going to eat, but because of how we're going to feel while we're there. We're going to feel good about eating with these people, and it's going to prompt conversation about the things that we care about wherever we are. And that's what I think is driving all of us, hopefully, also to be having this podcast episode in the first place.
I'm even more excited for our next meal than I was before.
You're always at 100% excited, so I don't know how much more excited that can be.
121%.
All right. I can't wait either. Let's get something on the books.
Va bene.
Okay. Arrivederci.
Ciao.
If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to like, follow, and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice, and to become a patron on our Patreon, patreon.com/golapod. You can also follow us on Instagram @DrCaligari's Cabinet and @KatieParla.